contrary to popular wishes, we have about as much idea as this podcast as you do. We've done no research, which makes it all very exciting. This is episode 16 of season 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I am Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we are talking Linux on the PS3, or more specifically off the PS3, while Fedora gets free case splice. We have, our discovery of the week and our hot seat section. This week it's Mike Saunders. And, of course, our open ballot, where we ask the question, what is your favourite Linux improvement in the last year? Don't forget, you can subscribe to Linux Format Magazine. We finished a magazine yesterday, so today we're off to the pub.
Hooray!
You can subscribe and buy us pub money.
Yeah, at
tuxradio.com/subscribe. Please do. We love you. We'll be your best friend. Well, Mike will.
Ever.
Mike will come around to your house and be your best friend.
Yes. Mike may vary. There's some sort of disclaimer in there.
News.
Awesome. It's now time for the news. And the top story on the list down here on this piece of paper in front of me is this comes after Sony removed the other OS option from the PlayStation 3 firmware so that we could no longer install Linux. There's been lots of lawsuits against this in various parts of the world where users of Sony's PlayStation have taken Sony to court to try and get them to re-implement the feature or give them some money back.
Because the feature's been taken away, isn't it? You buy a product with a feature list, with a list of bullet points, and then out of thin air.
You could have easily, in fact, lots of places did buy the PlayStation specifically for the other OS feature. That might have been the only thing they were interested in, like the US Defense Department.
Yeah.
And in Australia, apparently, what Sony did has been ruled legal. So they could do it, and they have without any.
What kind problem. Of precedent does that set? You know, can
a bad one.
You know, software makers just remove features from your computer. Could Apple come along and say, oh well, you know, we're just going to stop pulling iPhoto away from people's computers and leave you with nothing but a.
Well, it does. I mean, it's obviously madness. It is insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
Could like Ford come along and take the steering wheel off your car in the middle of the night?
Well,
and say, well, it's still okay for storage.
Certainly, certainly, Amazon could come along and disable text-to-speech functionality in Kindles. That was done.
Yeah, or remove
1984.
Oh well, at least it was a fairly dodgy copy of 1984. So yeah, don't mind that too much.
But you paid for it. It was Amazon who hadn't licensed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it was a bit of an accident.
The customers didn't know.
No. So, and they didn't fund that one. To be fair.
So, yes, the possibilities are limitless, how far this could go. I mean, I suppose it's going to happen to people who jailbreak their phones and then they're remotely disabled and no longer work for any degree, despite the fact you own the hardware and everything on it.
But yeah, I mean, that is still a kind of complicated area because you are fiddling around under the hood with it. But when you buy a product and it does X, Y, and Z, and then the company just takes away Z, that must violate all sorts of...
I don't have any sympathy for Sony. It's just a pity... the other OS option, I guess not many people use, and we think the reason why it was removed was because somebody found a vulnerability in it so that they could get down beneath the hypervisor on the PS3 to the actual hardware and maybe crack it.
The hardware
they've bought, but Sony will say this will lead to piracy. So they remove it for everyone, for all of us. And I did use Linux on my PlayStation occasionally, and it was cool to know it was there. And I mean, I guess the answer is that we don't buy PlayStations and we don't support Sony, but that leaves us with Microsoft Xboxes. Yes, which is ironic, really. Maybe Microsoft is the console vendor of choice we should choose, considering another one of our news items, which is actually last on the list, but I'll skip to this, is that Microsoft now loves open source software.
Really? Is that official? Yeah, Steve Ballmer said...
Wasn't this announced sometime around the time of the Oracle lawsuit against Sun? So it's like, we are your friends, you know. Forget the company that owns VirtualBox and OpenOffice.org and OpenSolaris. You know, we are your friends.
So they love open source, or do they love shared source, Microsoft's own initiative, a really strangely named initiative?
Well, yes, that was their weird initiative from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Isn't that something they did with Novell?
Yeah, that was something different.
Part of the source code is open, apart from this 1%.
they have released open source... They have released their code under GPL before, haven't they? There's been certain parts of the kernel featuring for their virtualization software to enable Linux to run on Windows.
To be clear on this, they have released a vast amount of open source code.
Is it useful, though? Is it useful for general users?
One of their major projects is a Haskell compiler.
Wow.
Under the BSD. But they Microsoft Research pays for this.
Yeah.
Just because we're not using it doesn't mean that it's not useful. The thing is, the core products, the ones everyone cares about, you know, your Windowses, your offices and stuff, they are in no way open source.
I'm sure I've got
doc format.
Yes.
I've got a copy of the Windows 2000 source code somewhere, but I think
you put it online.
So, I think it's great news. I think as long as we're not fighting Microsoft, it's good. I do feel that Microsoft have changed their attitude towards free software.
It's no longer a cancer now.
I think that was a mistake of Balmer's. And I think it's good. I think they've got to coexist in a world where Linux is becoming increasingly common, especially on the mobile market, where Microsoft completely fails. You know, there might even come a time where Microsoft creates its own software stack on top of the Linux kernel on a mobile phone. You know, why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're having another attempt, aren't they, with Windows Phone 7 Series Mobile Series 7.
Which looks hideous, absolutely hideous.
Well, it's got a strange UI, hasn't it? But they've just recently completely failed to get into the market with Kin, which was a complete disaster. So, yeah, they're hedging their bets on Phone 7 now.
I get the impression that Microsoft now realises they can actually work with Linux.
Mm.
In virtual machines is fine, the server space. And also, to an extent, for servers running web stuff or for their, obviously, they want their own, you know, Active Directory.
Yeah.
For the big stuff, but they're happy to let Linux coexist. Whereas on Macs, they lose a desktop space. They lose the Windows and the Office, which is their cash cows.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, actually, that they can say, hey, Linux, let's work together and crush Apple once and for all. Mm. That seems more likely to me.
It's interesting you say that, because I think at the time where there was all of this antagonism from Microsoft, they probably saw the Linux desktop as a threat.
Exactly, yes.
And
Macs weren't.
And I think over the last 10 years, Linux has shown that it isn't really a threat on the desktop space. Nothing
what
has changed.
What are you
changed.
Trying to say,
well,
Graham?
Okay, well, Vista was a massive failure, and Linux was unable to capitalize on that failure. And Windows 7 has, you know, filled in the space. I mean, we failed. Utterly. Microsoft see that failure. They think Linux is no longer a threat. However, OS X is becoming an increasing threat.
Well, they're selling more Macs than ever before, aren't they?
Is it increasing? What's their market share gone to now?
It's still quite small. It is relatively small, but it is definitely encroaching on. I mean, in terms of profitability, Apple is immense. I mean, I don't know. Their share might only be 5 or 6%.
I think it's about 8% now. Well, now that they have a larger market capitalization than Microsoft, i.e. their shares, multiplied number of issued, is more than Microsoft, that's pretty crazy when you think how small the market share is. I think MS sees them as a threat, basically, because Apple's got a huge amount of money now to throw around.
And mind share, everybody, I mean, iOS devices as well.
Yeah. We're seeing that recently. HP have just splashed out a huge amount of cash on 3PAR. And Google and Apple and Microsoft have all got huge war chests of cash. Oracle buying Sun. You know, talking massive stuff now. So I think MS can see, if Apple wanted to, they could snap up 50 large companies, $51 billion companies, and transform themselves into a massive, massive, massive company. So I think they're very worried about that, basically.
Right, okay, so we're glad Microsoft's on our side. Another news story. Yeah.
Hello, Microsoft. Welcome. Welcome to the fold.
K-Splice is now going to be part of Fedora. Now, K-Splice is a very cool technology that lets you swap the kernel without rebooting your machine.
Whoa.
Which is a neat, maybe a neat geeky gimmick, but I guess it's useful for real-time systems and other things.
Machines that you can never, ever shut down.
Yeah.
Like your own personal life support machine or something like
true,
that.
Well, that's true, yeah. That's true. I guess in the server space, you pay money for downtime. So, I guess it helps you in there. Well, I don't know.
You do right now, but in the cloud, in the future, you wouldn't, would you? Because it would just transfer somewhere
that's
else.
That's true, yeah.
When you reboot.
But I suppose that rebooting is an inefficiency. And if it's it is a niggle. We don't have to do it half as much as we do on other systems, but it is a niggle. Especially on Ubuntu, which seems to upgrade the kernel every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And leave it in the grub menu still.
Yes. That'd be a nice feature to have. So it's cool. I think we were just trying to read up on it before, but it looks like K-Splice actually hosts patched kernels, so that it said Fedora users and Ubuntu desktop users can download K-Splice versions of their kernel updates from the K-Splice web server. But other distributions will have to pay a subscription to get the same service.
So the technology is open source, isn't it? But they're offering a kind of subscription for access to the update.
Yeah. Isn't it shell scripts?
Just shell scripts.
I think a lot of scripting.
Cat stuff into dev mem and stuff like that.
You'd think there'd have to be some kernel hooks in there to do that. Yes. Anyway, and finally, probably the biggest story of the last couple of weeks is glibc, which has had a secret non-free part of it.
Oh, no.
Non-free in the FSF term. Forever.
This is ruining my hope.
Yeah, since it's one of those things that historically I think Sun's code predates the GPL.
Right.
So something like that, mid-80s or early-80s. So Sun created their own kind of license and said, you're free to do whatever you want as long as you keep this license in there. And I think that's remained as part of glibc until just a few weeks ago. And despite Sun being petitioned to change it for many, many years.
Ulrich Drepper didn't like it, did he?
I don't know why it's taken so long to change.
They were going to do it, and then they were bought out by Oracle.
Yes, but even before then, I remember this coming up.
It takes time, yeah.
So Oracle have freed glibc.
Yes, actually, that's true.
Wow, Oracle, what nice good guys.
So this is the final hurdle to Linux on the desktop now. It's been surmounted. Now it's going to take over.
Well, it was a bit of a skeleton in the closet, really, I think.
Let's see what Stallman's got to say about this. We've been using his non-free software for ages.
Yeah, it's not like we could have done without it.
Use BSD libc.
They've done this to distract us from their from their massive Google Android Java lawsuit.
Maybe, I don't know. But it begs the question, how many other small parts of the Linux system are going to be under similar licenses that we don't know about?
I mean, all that SCO Unix code in the Linux kernel, for starters.
Graham, Linux is just the kernel, you know.
Of course it is, yes.
If we're talking about GNU / Linux or Lignux.
So, that's great. Thanks, Oracle.
Hey!
It's time for You Dare Us.
They Dare Us.
Yep.
Wow.
In which we were dared. Did we dare? Were we dared or did we dare ourselves?
I think we dared ourselves. I think Graham dared us all.
Like crazy.
Yeah. Just remind everyone, it was Graham's idea.
Like a crazy work generating fool. Graham dared us to write a game. But we didn't get the usual 2 weeks to do it. We're doing it in 4 weeks. So this is the halfway point.
Oh. Better just do some coding here.
Let's shuffle some papers. Clearly, preparation is the most important step. So,
stage one planning.
So I don't think any of us have actually done much yet.
I've written
Paul's
code.
Done a lot. Yeah.
I've done a lot. Yeah.
Paul's
Paul,
done a lot.
Why don't you kick us off so we?
No,
look
no, I can go last.
Really
so don't embarrass
lame.
You all too much.
Well, shall I tell you about my game?
Do it. Mm. Please do.
Okay, two of my favourite games. One is Asteroids. The other favourite game is a game called Rockets, which was on the Amiga. Rockets was like, it was a 2D shooter, but the craft in Rockets had the same kind of momentum as the craft in Asteroids. But the best part about Rockets wasn't the shooting. It was the fact that you could race around a single screen in a kind of skid marks like course. And I spent days trying to shave off hundredths of a second from my time to get around these courses. So my game is the Asteroids physics put into a racing game in a kind of skid marks BMX simulator way, if anybody's old enough to remember those.
What's it called?
I haven't got a name for it yet.
Oh, that's a good name.
It's written, in fact, I've taken a lot of the code from a version of 2D Asteroids in a Pi game. Unfortunately, I didn't bring the name of the guy who's written it, but I'll make sure he's credited. I've got the basic racing mechanics working. It's complicated, actually. He's the guy who wrote the physics momentum code in the version of Asteroids is some kind of maths genius. And it's very difficult to get my head around it, but I've been able to mostly change it. I've got the craft behaving exactly as I want it, which is the main thing, and I've got basic level design going. So I now have to fine tune the timing mechanism. Maybe add things like a high score table.
And what license is this under?
It'll be GPL.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going for BioWare license for mine.
Well,
I've seen the BioWare license.
My code, you see. So the guy's Asteroids game was. Well, I don't know how it might end up that I rewrite most of it, but I'll have to use it as GPL. But, sorry, Mike.
That's all right.
BeerWare.
I'm going for BeerWare. Yeah, you know that license. It basically means if you use my software and I meet you, you've got to buy me a beer. That's great. I think it's actually an official. I think the Free Software Foundation as well says that counts as a free software license.
But won't you find yourself walking around Bath like in a bubble as you walk down the high street? Everyone will move away from you.
They do that anyway. So. Yeah. Well, I had various ideas for games, varying complexity, but time limits have forced me to do something a bit more traditional. So I'm going for a scrolling shoot 'em up in Pi game as well, which I'm currently working on in the middle. But my idea is to design it in such a way that anybody can make easy levels for it. So you open a text file and you've got different ways to describe how the baddies move, or different waves of baddies, or boss and stuff like that. So a kind of an engine for a shoot 'em up that anybody
Paul
can
do something similar to that a couple of years ago.
Well, yeah, there was what was it called? The thing that that you made, the engine
Fuzz,
yeah, which was XML, wasn't it?
XML, C-sharp, Mono, and SD.NET.
Right, yeah. But this, I just want to use like text files or CSV files or something like that to describe the engine. So it's quite a simple thing, but it's...
Also, that's how Trout Wars worked too, wasn't it? Trout Wars I did in C++ and SDL.
Yeah, yeah.
Get rid of text files. Have you just cloned Trout Wars?
But I saw it yesterday running. It's very cool. I especially like the way that the background transitions from one level to the next.
Yeah, yeah. I've tried to make it as smooth as possible. And it's got all the little animations as baddies get shot and stuff. Dogging around. So yeah, I'm still got quite a bit of code to do on it. But I'm using everything from OpenClipArt as well, and it doesn't actually look that bad, surprisingly. So there are a few good little spaceship designs on there. Cartoony spaceship designs. So
yeah.
I just have to get some music from somewhere.
I don't have to worry about the graphics because it's all really lovely vectors, which I really like. You know, right. A bit like Darwinia or some of those introversion games.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of my youth.
Yeah, them were days.
Yeah. I've done some music as well.
Oh, you've actually written some music?
That was the fun bit.
That's what you did first, wasn't it?
First, yeah. I did it on a Monotron, actually, which is a really cheap analog cork synth, £50.
That sounds good. Oh, I saw a stylophone on sale yesterday.
Oh, really?
Oh, hang on. Oh, well, let me save that for my discovery of the week.
Okay, scratch that.
Awesome. Yes, I'm still at the planning stage. I thought I'd probably go back and find there's a games programming tutorial series that we've done. We've done a few, actually.
Yes.
And see if I can follow those and make it work as a non-programmer. So that we've had Trout Wars, which was, I think, a scrolling shoot 'em up.
It was Mike's game.
We've had... there was that... The one that we used Chad in.
Hanging Chad.
Hanging Chad, yes. That was cool.
3D.
Using Ogre, which I really don't like as a toolkit.
That seemed such a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
Is Ogre still going?
Yeah, it is. Okay. People love Ogre. I don't love Ogre.
Well, there you go. That's it. That's literally as far as I've got.
Have you got a name for yours yet, Mike?
Yeah. Vzz Books.
Is that from Bottom?
Yeah. I don't think many people would get that reference.
Yes! Fantastic.
Look it up.
That's when I do your crossword.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Well, mine, as you say, is actually quite far along. I can show it to you. I've got my Linux box just here running it.
My silver Linux box. For you
It's aluminium.
And it's called Switcheroo.
Is that KDE4?
It's called Switcheroo, and the game's very simple. I'll try and control it while moving around the microphone. Basically, what you do is you have to change letters of stuff. So I've got a how to play here. It explains how to play the game. It's quite straightforward. It's just like explaining how to do. You get four letters, like L-I-N-E, and a selection of 10 letters to play with. You have to change one letter to make new words. And if you do it certain ways, like using harder letters like H, J, or Z, you get more points. And you only have 2 minutes to do the whole thing. And basically,
beautiful graphics.
Thank you. They say that on the microphone. It's beautiful graphics.
Yeah, they are.
So what you do is you press new game.
That anime schoolgirl looks really hot.
So I've got letters S-I-N-G and my letters along here, you know, J-B-D-R-W. I can take that W and drag it over the S and match it. And I score points up here, score 8.
Dude.
If I can make her word, which is will, I'll get more points and get more time as well. So time is obviously ticking down the entire time.
So it's a new letter. A new letter one slides in
every single time. You're always getting a new letter every single time. So, you know, I can carry on.
Have you been playing a lot of Boggle?
Does it recognise Bing?
Bing? You mean the sound of found? No. Doesn't like Bing, yeah. So maybe it'll recognise Wang.
Microsoft needs to pay us more.
Wang is bad. They recognise Ring. Ring works, and I expect Ding will work too.
And if you nice get, effects.
If you get stuck, you can press refresh letters, and you get new sounds. But it docks you 10 points each time, you see, so it makes it hard to do. Obviously, I'm on 0 points now, I can refresh as many times as I want, it doesn't really matter.
You're minus points.
Yeah. It's great.
Mm. So it's actually written using Python, using my own Python library Gloss to do all the effects, which is why you like it, because the effects are free in Gloss. So
what, all the transitions and sliding stuff is all Gloss?
Yep. All Gloss, so they only fade things out, they get effects and stuff. It's
cool.
All done in Gloss, yeah. So it's actually quite a new release, as you can see. I make a few changes to bug fixing and stuff, but I mean, it's pretty close. So
it looks brilliant, Paul. It really does.
So that's almost done. That's Switcheroo. So you'll see that GPL3 shortly, I expect.
Super cool.
Where have all the assets come from? All the
I've made all of it except for the girl, which I paid for, and she's released it under a free software license.
Oh, excellent.
Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike.
GNU/Manga Girl.
Yeah, so everyone now gets free artwork. Yeah. Really nice, as you can see, really nice quality
artwork. Which we've talked about, it's always the hardest part.
It is. It is. Yeah. So I paid for it. So yes, it's pretty close.
Good.
So that's mine.
Wow, we're all really awesome, apart from me.
Oh, well.
And with such loving, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, in the hot seat, this time with Mike Saunders, and our open ballot where we ask the question, what is your favourite Linux improvement?
So, discovery of the week. I hope we've all got some excellent discoveries here to share with the world, all the things that we've found. I'll start off because mine's actually a bit negative. I have discovered that the GIMP's interface is pretty, pretty bad.
Well, you've only just discovered that in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've used the GIMP for the last 10 years in one way or the other, and I've never...
Have you been using it in text mode?
That's the problem. But I've never had any big problems with it because I guess I haven't really used it to much of an extent, but now, in the last week or so, I have been using it a lot as part of this game project, chopping and dealing with the artwork for the game. And just some of the way it behaves completely boggles my mind. You can use tab to get rid of the toolbox thing that's always floating around. But if you press tab to bring it back up again, then it focuses on that. So you're pressing tab to cycle through the elements of it, and you can't get rid of it without having to go and click away.
Right,
or you've got an image on the screen, and you want to close the GIMP, so you hit Alt and F4 to get rid of the image, but then it just leaves the blank window there. It's like some strange MDI mode that's not properly MDI.
It's really weird.
It doesn't fit in with any other type of interface I've ever used, and it's starting to really, really annoy me. So, the GIMP's got loads of features, and it's full of great technology, but I'm finding it really, really frustrating to work with. So, fingers crossed that GIMP 2.8, when it arrives in a long time, will actually be better.
It does need some love. It needs some real UI people to
It needs some. I guess they want to not stray too far from Photoshop in some respects. And
I think maybe they should forget Photoshop completely.
Yeah, and just say this
Photoshop
is.
Isn't that? I think Photoshop's still difficult to use.
Photoshop is very hard to use. Yeah, it's easier than GIMP, but it's still just a mess.
I was doing some selection stuff in Photoshop the other day, and it was really difficult. I was trying to constrain the selection to a certain ratio.
Right.
Which I can actually do quite easily in GIMP. It comes up in the tool for the selection tool. But I did find a way of doing it, but it wasn't easy anyway.
But yeah, they should throw up, open up the community to all ideas and say, look, come along, let's think of a radical new interface for the GIMP that makes people work better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my slightly pessimistic discovery. Graham?
I remember it's piratepad.net.
Pirate Pad.
Have you seen this?
No.
It's what did it? Piratepad.net. It's a very, very simple website, but it's a collaborative note-taking, online talking, discussion, building document thing. It's really quick, and it's really easy, and it's what Wave should have been.
I was going to say, it sounds like Wave.
Wave. Yeah. You log into you don't log in at all. You go to Pirate Pad. You click on the big only button on the screen, create new pad. And what you see there is what looks like a WYSIWYG text editor on the left with a chat channel on the right and lots of different components you can drag in, you can draw, you can sketch. Other people can do the same things, unlimited redo, undo, redo. And then if you want to share it with someone, you just copy and paste the URL and stick it into a window, an email, and send it to them. And then they can join immediately. It's fantastic for informal note taking and online meetings. And in fact, I came across it because a lug was using it.
Oh, right.
I was looking for lug news just the other week, and the lug was using PiratePad to talk about what they were going to cover in the next meeting and the Software Freedom Day.
So this is all HTML5e, yeah, Ajaxy, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Open.
It's so quick, and it's implemented so well. It's a great tool.
Maybe Google will buy it and replace Wave with it.
Wave is terrible in comparison.
Was that the Herefordshire lug?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
We might as well give him a shout out.
Yeah,
it was. Rather than saying a lug.
Well, you could. Yeah, going through the main list, you find the documentation where they discussed Software Freedom Day, and you can see how they built it, and see how they talked about it, and it's great.
But if anybody really can come along and hack it, then are all sorts of trolls the internet going to come along and bust
if that
up?
Happens,
yeah.
You can actually lock the session and then make it invitee only.
Oh right,
so
okay.
It doesn't have to be as open as that, but it's just pity to spoil it.
Yeah,
but yeah, for small things, I think it's brilliant.
PiratePad.net.
Sweet.
Don't know what Paolo.
I don't know what it's called. That.
Mine is a rediscovery. I really hate Python.
Really? You'd forgotten for a moment that you hate Python.
No, I don't hate Python, obviously. There are a number of things that annoy me in Python, and I'm now not constrained by 1 minute, I can go into more depth. But no, seriously, it's tiny things. It's small things that I know the Python guys are not going to fix. So it annoys me no end. I want to give some specific examples. Here we go. There is no switch case statement. You have to say if foo is bar, elif foo is bar. I know it's the same result, it just looks ugly. And it's not very pleasant to write again and again and again, the same sort of thing.
Do you know why they haven't incorporated that? You've just seen them making it more verbose.
The thing is, people have written ways to make it work that isn't switch case, but looks as if it could be switch case, using Python hacks. But the problem is, Python prides itself on being obvious what that line of code does, and all solutions are not obvious to me. Unless you use that personal solution yourself, you will not know what it does, really. So I end up doing if elif because it's obvious what it does.
Right.
I think a switch case would save me typing a little bit, which would be nice, but they haven't got it. They have no enums.
No, only,
And again, there are hacks to make enums work. I'm using one of them because I just gave up. It was just too painful otherwise. So I think I do, some variable name equals range 4 will create you enums, basically. They could change that to be actual real enums. There are other hacks to do it, but they haven't used them.
Right.
It's just deeply frustrating. And the way Gloss works, Gloss is object-oriented. So I have to deal with the object-oriented mess that is in Python, which it's not great. It's really underpowered.
__init_.
Yeah, and the constant use of the word self everywhere you go.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, whereas at least in C++, that's implied. Mm. So it's for doing this game, I've written 1,000 lines and the game's almost finished, and that's fantastic. You know, that's obviously very little code. But it is a frustrating thing to use sometimes. And I don't really enjoy it.
Are they working on like Python 4000 now or anything like that?
I have no idea.
Three
ones out. And well, because switch case has been a Python enhancement protocol, whatever they call it, PEP things, for a while now. And everyone knows they want it. No one actually wants it, apparently, they say. So we're not going to have it. It's that simple. It's a simple language feature it just hasn't got. You know,
set up a petition online.
Yeah, maybe.
Listeners, if you want switch case, then post a message on our... comments and see.
The thing is, with Python, like I said this talking to Mike earlier, Python users are very mature people. I found that I can say my own opinions about Python freely and no one gets angry, no one flames me. They say, listen, you think that? That's fine, you know. And whereas in other communities, you know, it's not quite so friendly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention any one of them, you know, like KDE.
KDE.
But it's another community. If you say anything bad about them, you get proper rage in response. Mm. Python isn't like that. So I can honestly say, I've got these problems with Python, and they'll be like, okay, it's fine. Let's get on with life.
Right.
So I like that.
Okay.
Awesome.
And Andrew?
Yeah, I've got lots of non-Linux related stuff.
Excellent. Settle down, listeners. Enjoy the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I found two good things and one bad thing. Yesterday, I went to Bristol and I saw a shop selling a stylophone. It was only 20 quid.
Did you buy it?
No. I just looked and went, ooh, there's a stylophone. I'll spend my money on something else. Not as good. And I went to a place called Start the Bus and I had a burger, and that was really, really nice. So I recommend the burgers in Start the Bus.
Start the Bus.
Yep. The negative is, right, train prices. What is it all about? I want to get a train.
Open that can.
I want to go from Bath to York
for a stag do, I'm looking at the prices 6 weeks in advance. 6 weeks, mark you.
I'm going to York soon. But go on, what is this?
There's a blur. On the day, the cheapest one I found was £20. 20 quid for a single.
That's all right.
That's fine. 10 minutes later, this is something daft, like, you know, 10:30. So it's not peak oil, not peak travel hours. just a random time during the day. It's not particularly early, particularly late. 10 minutes later, £119.50.
Oh, that must be a very pretty train.
I don't understand. It makes no sense.
It must be a different train operator. You know, probably the first one might be cross-country, and the next one will be London Midland or something daft like that.
But National Rail, maybe it's not the trains themselves. Maybe it's just this awful website, nationalrail.org or something, whatever it's called.
The National Rail website.
the National Rail website, the overarching, you know, website that you go to, the first port of call for buying train tickets.
Mm.
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, oh, this is Virgin Trains and this is, you know, GNER.
Right.
There is no explanation. The train that costs 120 quid, that might be gold-plated.
Yeah.
It might get you there in super fast time. It might be driven by Richard Branson. It's no logic, no sense.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
That pretty much sums up the entire British Rail network. Really does. Horrible.
So if I don't make it, sorry, Neil. I'm sure you'll have a lovely time without me.
You can get the 20 quid train, though. Why not?
Yeah,
do
I can.
Right. So you should make it.
It's not gold plated, is it? That's good. It's £100 worse. When I get to York will be rubbish.
You want a reassuringly expensive train, yeah, don't you?
And now it's time for Graham's favourite section in the hot seat, this time with Mike Saunders.
Hello.
Who wants to spin the wheel?
Shall I do it?
Yeah, go ahead. Spin the wheel.
Okay, hold on. My back's a little... Okay, right, ready? Go!
You spun it quite hard, didn't you?
It's still going.
Is it ever going to stop?
Okay.
Is it frictionless?
It's coming to a halt.
It looks like file systems.
File systems?
How did you get all that on such a small space?
We got Rebecca Smalley, who writes really tiny letters.
Awesome.
Mike, would you like to do a 1 minute in the hot seat on file systems?
That's an offer.
Not
I can't
have a
refuse.
Choice, mind you.
Yeah.
All right, I will fire up my Android phone and get you a timer.
Will it work properly?
Hopefully.
It violates all sorts of patents, that Android phone. Okay.
It's its own GNU implementation of time.
GNU slash time.
Are you
right,
ready?
Okay.
Press that button and you're off. Are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
File systems. Not file systems, the technology per se, because Linux supports all sorts of different file systems and that's good. There are plenty of fast, well-performing file systems. But the layout of the Linux file system is something that really, really, really needs to be updated. I mean, it stems from an era of 70s Unix machines. But today, a desktop operating system, when you install the program, it should not scatter files all over your hard drive in hundreds of different directories. That's a nightmare to clean up. Files and packages and everything should be kept, programs should be kept in single directories so you can easily access them. This is nothing new. They do this on RISC OS, going back many years, they do it on Mac OS X and presumably next step before that. This makes it really easy. You can put an application where you want. It doesn't have to have a /user/bin and a /etc and all this kind of stuff. Keep it together. It's really, really easy. It makes life easier for users and administrators. It simplifies the whole thing and it gets us further and further away from this kind of horrible mixture of 70s file system layout and /opt where people throw everything together in one place, like openoffice.org.
And that's your time up. 1 minute.
Very good. What is EXT3?
I think all.
How did you get onto that so quickly?
All hot seats should end with like openoffice.org.
Yes, it did feel like another file systems why. And thank you, Mike, for...
Did I do it good?
Seat. You did it great. Which leads us directly on to our open ballot, which is, of course, Graham's favourite section.
Oh, yeah.
Our question this month... Our question this podcast was, what is your favourite Linux improvement in the last year? We've had many responses. I will shuffle some paper around and find some interesting ones for you. In the meantime, team?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I just have to think of something. Hold on.
I know mine.
What's yours?
I know mine. It touches on something that Mike's already mentioned.
Oh, openoffice.org.
My favourite improvement was not a new feature added, but it was a feature taken away.
Oh.
And it was the decision in the most recent Ubuntu to remove the GIMP as standard. And I think it's ace. Because, right, GIMP, it's really complicated. Imagine you bought a Mac, for instance, and Photoshop were on there by default. You'd be clicking around and think, oh, what's in this new machine I've got? And click on Photoshop and just be really scared by all the stuff that it does.
Yeah, you're right.
It does loads and loads of stuff. And I think Linux has a geeky, complicated, hard for advanced users only image. By getting rid of GIMP, but GIMP is still only one click away, and a password. You can still use GIMP. You can still get it for free, and it still does all the cool stuff. But most people don't want that. They just want to reduce red eye and organize their photos into folders and just the basic stuff that you can do with KAlbum.
Mm.
So by getting rid of GIMP, they've done Linux's image no end of good, made it just look as competent, but a lot easier to use.
Okay, well, let's turn to our listeners. We have Daz Fuller here, who says, "Please don't hate me. My favourite improvement over the last year has got to be Ubuntu One. It's great that now all of my machines are synced together, and I can buy music direct from my favourite media player. Plus, with contact sync and music streaming coming out from mobile phones, it's all looking really exciting."
Mm.
Which is about, we don't use Ubuntu One, do we?
No.
What, is he on our staff list? I don't recognise him.
Oh, he's over there. Hi, Daz.
Hey, Daz. So I don't use it.
No, I don't. But it's great to hear somebody's really getting maximum usage out of the system, because they have worked hard to link it all together. And yeah.
Marvin said it's got to be Android, which has gained significant popular momentum this year. I think perhaps that's one to review next year after the lawsuit concludes.
The lawsuit will be over by next year.
Well, yeah, we'll exactly keep on going, I guess. Dylan C. said, GUI redesigns. I like the way that developers are actually taking the time and effort to redesign application interfaces at the same time improving usability. GIMP and Blender are the best examples of this.
Okay. Blender.
Blender. So
best be trolling.
So, they looked so awful in the first place.
So we have now read a troll out on the home.
Trolls, trolling, trolls, trolling, trolls.
Excellent. Jonathan K said, Linux has now got to the stage where 99% of the time it just works. Is this another troll? We can't tell. You don't have to go in and fix your XOR config, which is true, you don't nowadays.
Much.
Or pull your hair over wireless drivers. I'm not sure about that one I happened to do. They just say mileage may vary, which is somewhat of an understatement. Mike, what is your number one improvement in the last year?
Oh, there have been lots of little bits about it. Mine is perhaps not so much Linux per se, but Google Chrome is just so, so good. And it's great that it's fully supported, fully working on Linux. It's making the web faster and better. Every way. So for me, as a all of us use the web loads.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Did you see the news story just a few days ago about Chrome 7?
Chrome 7?
But the GPL accelerated version.
Have they got some insane version numbering system where the higher, obviously better?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sure I'm running Chrome 5 at the moment. Something I don't know if it auto updates.
Hasn't been out that long. You've got Chrome 5 already.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of Inkscape.
0.547
now.
Yeah.
Something crazy like that. So we have Target Renegade saying Google's open sourcing of WebM is fantastic news, as is the recent release of a Linux Gmail video chat plugin, which is true.
Yes.
Has anyone used that yet, the Linux?
No.
No. You used the Gmail chat phone, didn't you? The chat phone thing?
Yeah, I did try the phone thing.
And that worked.
That worked. That was good. Well, I didn't want to pay for the call, so I just let it ring the phone. So it rang the phone, but I didn't actually speak over it.
Like a teenager. I've got no credit on my phone, so I'll just ring you, and then you can pick me up.
No, I was sat in the house on my little netbook. I dialed my own home phone number, and it rang. I thought, wow. Good one.
Are you absolutely sure it was? It might have been somebody else, and you didn't answer.
Ray Wood said, I have an 80-plus-year-old lady and a very technical, a very non-technical pal, both using Linux Mint 9. Linux Mint love. They didn't install it themselves. They helped them out, of course, but they have no problems with it. And that's pretty impressive, isn't it, really? I'm hearing quite a bit of Linux.
Say which version of Mint? Nine. KDE? I mean, desktop.
I guess it's the standard version.
Yeah, presumably the standard version.
When are we going to give more love to Linux Mint?
We just, listeners, should we give more love to Linux Mint?
Yes or no?
Silence.
You decide.
Wait, well, they're not answering, are they?
All right.
So perhaps that means no.
Oh, they just love Linux Mint so much, they're not even listening to us.
Writing really long emails.
Yeah.
Kevin Collier says basically the same thing. He's got a 60-year-old friend and a 14-year-old friend who have just got it all working, which is great, which is perhaps lucky. But he really liked T-Mobile mobile data stick that just worked in Kubuntu. That's fantastic, in fact.
Was that one of those 3G?
We should try that, didn't we? We should do some sort of...
Yeah, you're right. I wonder if T-Mobile actually advertised Linux support, because it is a minefield.
Yeah.
And also they change like from 1 6-month period to the next.
Yeah. Yes. Dan Dart says Ubuntu 10.04 with core performance boost. Better file systems.
Is that the other you should the talk same to him. Dan?
It is. You should talk to Dan about these file system things. Double Diode said Nouveau. Well, I'm sure the rest of the world talking about Ubuntu. We get enough flames, don't we? Nouveau is Double Diode's answer. He loves Nouveau, which is, of course, the NVIDIA, free NVIDIA acceleration driver for Linux. And it's fantastic. So he says, now if my shiny spinning cube desktop crashes, I know that it can be fixed by a community of very clever programmers.
One day.
Yeah. Swifty Tech says, my favourite improvement is multi-monitor support finally working on my laptop. Cineram with a desktop on the right display with different resolutions in each monitor, with no restarting X when he plugs and unplugs. Hello, 1998.
I still have to edit xorg.conf to do that. Oh. Create xorg.conf for these things, but no, I'm not going to go down that
mode line.
So why does he not get flamed for being cynical? Why is it only us who gets flamed for being cynical?
I don't know.
It's because we're professionals and we're highly paid.
By Canonical. Yeah.
You're letting that contract down.
Sipping my wine here from a silver slipper.
Kenneth C.T. Franson is his name. It says it's very hard to choose because he loves the fact that distributions work flawlessly with dual screens. The APT became a standard, apparently, which is interesting.
Did it?
All other package managers died.
Yes.
All that, KDE finally killed off that GNOME garbage and became the default desktop environment.
Oh, I remember that. That was pretty cool.
Oh, that's interesting. What if, would you accept that if there were only KDE and only APT?
Well, then he said, oh, wait, you said in the last year, not next year. He pulled a fast one on us then, you see.
Crafty.
And more Linux Mint love.
He wants more Linux Mint love.
He seems to like it. He recommends it to everyone, apparently.
Minty fresh.
Thanks, Kenneth. We have so many things from Uomo Senzanomi.
Oh, no, there's under one at all.
Yes.
None.
Who said lots of things, including Google Chrome, but specifically the introduction of lightweight distros, like Lubuntu.
LXDE.
More Ubuntu. Come on. Flame him. Leave us alone for a change.
It's that guy's fault.
Yes. Uomo Senzanomi wants Ubuntu. He likes it because it eliminates traditional startup and shutdown time seen with regular distros. So you get to a functional device faster, which is true.
Ubuntu is becoming quite popular. I think it's rising up there on DistroWatch
charts. It's number 10, isn't it?
It's number 10, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Mm. Graham?
My choice actually would be KDE 4.5 or KDE becoming usable over the last 12 months. I think sat here 12 months ago and discussed KDE, we'd probably be slagging it off mostly. But for me anyway, I find it the most usable version of KDE since KDE 3.5. So maybe that's what it is. It's taken a long time to get to this point, but it doesn't crash, apart from some of the plasmids still crash. Plasmoids.
BioShock.
Shouldn't be blamed BioShock.
Too much case splicing.
Case splicing little girl's DNA. Yes, it would be KDE. I think it's back, and I hope they stick with the KDE 4 version for the next 10 years. I don't want to hear any talk of 5.
Guadavere agrees. He agrees. He says it works. KDE SC4.
Oh, yes. But we got criticised for not putting SC in the review and tax credit. It's KDE 4.5.
Damn you!
Haven't they stopped using Software Collection?
No. They still use it.
We've stopped using it because it was silly.
We never used it, did we?
No. So, Philem Whiteley says nothing, nada, nout. There's been nothing of great significance this year at all, which is a bit depressing. So it's been a disappointment.
Oh.
by discovering your podcast 2 weeks ago.
Hey.
Thank you, Philin. We like you.
Good work, that guy.
Mike will be your best friend, not just your normal friend. Mm. He cites things that aren't very good. Ubuntu one syncs, S-I-N-K-S, rather than sync, S-Y-N-C. He's so clever.
Lol, I get it.
UNR is okay-ish. Ubuntu quality seems a bit of a letdown. So a bit depressing, quite frankly. Jeff from Toro Radio. Hooray.
Hey, New Zealand Radio.
Wow. Toro Radio. We like them here. New Zealanders, we love them. Fantastic part of the country. He's been using Linux for a very, very long time now. He hasn't used Ubuntu one yet, but he plans to. Basically, he thinks it's fantastic because he gets so much fantastic software like Audacity without Microsoft, and he thinks it's a great system. Long may it live and grow.
Mm.
Thanks, Jeff. I think it has the new theme music for this year's podcast. Last year's got a bit stale, says Adam Griffiths. Oh, hang on. A little bit of a backhanded comment there. Graham, write us some new music.
Didn't we try and change it? Nobody wanted it changed in the end. That was why. We said we want some recommendations for new music, and we didn't get any.
The Pink Ponies song. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes.
Naturally.
Mel says, simple as that, usability plus design. And I love this bit. It seems that Mike Shuttleworth's speech 2 years ago influenced a lot of people.
Damn, it's all coming out
It's all coming out now. The truth is finally out. Mel has outed you. And then my favourite person, even better than Uono Senzanomi, Morten Jule Johansson Zolde Feher. I'm guessing it is a mix of Hungarian and something else. Anyway, he loves the fact that netbooks have been taken seriously. I will add to that, just as the iPad comes along, it's a bit late, and he loves the fact that it's now being taken into account at the very, very beginning of the software process. This is a whole podcast full of fantastic names. The obvious answer says Paul Szczepanek. I'm sorry, your name's hard to pronounce. Paul S. says the obvious answer is hardware support. Do you remember Endless Wrapper?
Some people still have to use it. I thought it was still going.
Some don't, but it, not many folks do anymore, thanks to Intel releasing such wonderful drivers for the graphics card and the network cards.
That's true.
Yeah, that's
made a huge difference. Well done, Intel. I don't think people really realise. He answered again, just to make me read his name out twice, I guess, but he provides a too long, didn't read version of Lick, Licks, if you're a newbie, which is great, and you can read more on his answer because it's very long. And that's it. That's all our listener comments. My personal one is Systemd. Which is a fantastic new boot-up system to replace Upstart.
Oh.
Yes, because Upstart is now Ubuntu have changed their policy. Well, sorry, Canonical, our employer. Canonical, that hideous company, has changed their contribution policy. So if you want to contribute to Ubuntu software, or Canonical-owned software, you should assign them the copyright.
No way.
Which is bad.
That sounds a bit egotistical, then.
It does, but it's not uncommon. Some do the same thing for OOO. Hence why GoOO was one of the reasons that was formed.
Right.
So this is a shame because Scott Remnant James, the guy who made it originally, did it in his did it in his spare time originally, not on company time, but it's now a company thing, and now to contribute you have to do that. So a lot of folks like Fedora or SUSE want to migrate away to a new version of Systemd designed from scratch to be more like macOS X's LaunchD system. Which is cool. So it's another fork, another rewrite, another replacement for init. We've had quite a few.
Yeah.
Was it init next gen? Init NG?
Init NG came out a while ago. It was the first type of parallel booting.
Well, apart from changing the init scripts to do all the multi side by side, which is
just put and
disaster.
Symbols after everything, ampersand.
Init J, init NG, then Upstart, and now Systemd. I would be very surprised if Systemd does not catch on. I reckon 11.04 we use Systemd. I think Upstart stays numbered.
Oh. We will see.
We will.
I'll say.
And with that, we come to the end of our open ballot. And in fact, the end of our podcast. Don't forget.
Oh, hang on. No, what? We never end it like this, do we? Come on. Right. So, you know what? We're a bit harsh on the GIMP before, so I think we should give it a last little bit of love. Who can. Who remembers here? When was the GIMP's first public release?
1993.
Nope.
1893. It hasn't changed the UI since then.
98?
It's actually 1996. That was version 0.54. And what toolkit was it using?
Its own.
Its own.
It was using Tickle.
No, it was using Motif.
I was going to...
The first public release.
They realised how crap Motif was.
They went with Motif for a while, and by the time of 1.0, which was in June the 5th, 1998, so a couple of years later on, then they actually had the GIMP toolkit and the GIMP drawing kit, GDK, right. Which of course is, you know, one of the biggest ones on the other one, XFCE today. So, kudos to them.
Cool.
The dog's called Wilbur, in case you were going to ask that.
Is it a dog?
Yeah, is it not a dog?
I have no idea. It's some sort of evil mutant thing in a balloon.
Wilbur, it's I don't know. We'll tell you in the next podcast.
that's another one more thing, isn't it, for you? What is Wilbur? And with that, let us know what you think Wilbur is. With that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget, all the notes, once Graham writes them up, will be on the website for you to enjoy and criticise freely. And of course, we look forward to reading your comments out either on our open ballot or email direct to us. You can email me at paul.hudson@futurenet.com and I will read them all. Great. And maybe even reply.
Wow.
Be lucky. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.